time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit, and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation, all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Interesting panel discussions today we have on the platform. We've never done this before, people, but let me explain what we'll do. Well, the midterm elections are coming up very quick now. We're just weeks away here. So we're going to have the liberal perspective of what happens between now and the election and what they believe with, again, a liberal perspective. And then we'll have, after that, the next segment, a conservative perspective. So we'll deliver both of them to you, but not simultaneously, so they're talking over each other. You know how that goes. They'll each be individual. But I think you'll get an interesting perspective of what we expect ahead, what the left is thinking, what's the right is thinking, and where do we go from here. Let's get to the top stories, friends, of the week here, and welcome on Ryan Morrow is here. He's the Shillman Fellow and National Security Analyst for the Clarion Project. Also, Ilana Friedman is a strategic counterterrorism intelligence analyst. She focuses on the impact of terrorism and its threat to America and the West. She's a columnist right here at America Out Loud. Ilana, let's start with the stock market business here a little bit. The market has been rallying. The economy has been very good. It's been a strange week for the market. We had major nosedives like we hadn't seen since, you know, almost a year ago. But there was a bit of a rally on Friday. What do you make of this from the political implications, Ilana? And what's your take on it?
Well, I'm not sure that there are political implications yet. I think people were so shocked by the sudden downturn last week.
I know.
And it lasted until Friday. The Dow dropped by nearly 8% with the Dow lost over 1,200 points. And that was really shocking. But then on Friday, it went up and down all day and it ended up 300 points. So I think for the moment, the market will recover. Mm-hmm. The question is, what caused this? And most analysts blame the Feds, the Federal Reserve, when the 10-year U.S. Treasury spiked. But I think there's more to it than that. Some analysts also blame the trade wars. Mm-hmm. The so-called trade wars, I think the president is going to be able to resolve them fairly soon. Mm-hmm. So I think it largely has to do with a very dramatic reaction to the Fed raising rates.
Now, the other thing is the potential of the tariffs, as you just said, and specifically China is weighing on everybody. In fact, a lot of people are referring to China as the next Cold War, potentially. Ryan, what do you think about that? Let's touch on China real quickly, because China, in many ways, people are saying it's almost like the relationship is becoming very weird, very odd. And it's strange because you remember the president met with Xi Jinping very early on when the administration started, and he kept talking about them being friends, and I think he tried to pull him in because he knew it was going to be a big lift with China. But people are actually referring to that as a Cold War coming. Do you find that a little odd, our relationship with China right now?
You know what? I don't think that it has changed all that much just yet. When you look at the rhetoric from both sides, that has changed a bit, particularly on the American side, not so much on the Chinese side. But the fundamental dynamics of the relationship haven't changed, even if Trump is putting pressure on the Chinese. What I mean by that is that there was one analyst who put it perfectly. He said, when America gets a cold, China gets pneumonia. Mm-hmm. And so anything that is bad for us is actually much worse for the Chinese government. And then you add to that the fact that most analysts do believe that the Chinese population, even though they're nationalistic, they still want modern progress. They still want more freedoms. They may not be willing to have a destabilizing revolution or a civil war over it at this point, but that political dynamic internally within China actually works in our favor. If I was a Chinese Communist Party official, I would not be looking to the future with a whole lot of optimism. As for Trump saying, oh, they're friends, I think that had more to do with North Korea, because he did win some cooperation from the Chinese on North Korea, and now he's focusing on trade.
Everybody knows this story by now, the American pastor, Andrew Brunson, and he now has been amazingly released. Well, he was charged. Again, I love the way they do that, Ryan. So they charge him as a, you know, well, you're guilty. You know, they make themselves feel good so they can hold it up in a court of law, which is what I'm guessing. I don't know what you'll say. And then, okay, you're free to go. What do you make of this?
Deal that was struck behind the scenes. And yes, Trump deserves any type of credit that he gets for that, particularly the sanctions that were relatively light that were put on Turkey, but had dramatic effect. We had much more that we could do and should do to Turkey. Here's where my concern comes in. When there's a deal like that, as is being reported, what did we give up? What did was it just simply that Turkey just was forced to bend because of our sheer force of will and the sanctions? The rumors going around is that that's not the case, but we don't know what we gave up.
What's your prediction on NATO? Does Turkey stay part of NATO, or do they get removed at some point here ahead?
I suspect that you are going to hear some at some point, maybe if it's during Trump's second term, if he gets reelected. It doesn't appear to be imminent, but at some point there's going to have to be this conversation about establishing a process to kick a country out of NATO. That process doesn't exist. If it did exist, you'd be hearing about Turkey getting kicked out. But apparently there was never any, you never see it on any website, you never see it in any document. You join and then that's it. You're in.
Yeah. So sort of like the family when you join the mob, Ryan, right? To me, as far as I'm concerned, Ilana, very shameful what's happened with Turkey and the people of Turkey, which is an amazing place. It saddens me what's taken place out there, which is why I asked the question about NATO. But what do you think the implications of this with Pastor Brunson? Will the relationship get back on track, I'm asking?
The Trump administration pressed hard for his release. But after the fact, the White House refused to say whether it would now lift the sanctions. And the sanctions are very serious. They're really hurting Turkey. President Trump did say that no deal had accompanied Brunson's release. That means we didn't give up anything, according to the president. But the sanctions have heavily impacted the Turkish economy, which is now on the brink of recession. The Turkish lira inflation is nearly five times the Turkish bank's target, and the interest rates have risen unbelievably nearly 24%. So what the banks are dealing with now in Turkey is the possibility of failure. And this is a very serious problem for Erdogan. We're going to have to see how he deals with all this. We have to remember that Turkey is really, as Ryan said, Turkey is a terrorist state, and they don't fall under the same rules and regulations because they insist on being who they are, and it's detrimental to the rest of the world.
Yeah. Why we're on Turkey, Ilana, this really blends into this next story, which is, again, another significant story. You know what's ironic, Ilana, about this? Here you say, well, you know, I kind of, so Turkey, you're saying, they're kind of, well, they're more or less a terrorist state, Malcolm, which, again, nobody really says that out loud, people, because they get nervous when you say that about Turkey, who's a member of NATO, as I said. It's all a bit weird. Well, Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi here, he was evidently killed inside the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, in Turkey now, by the way. So everybody knows this story by now. They seen him going in. They didn't see him coming out. Turkey stands up really quickly, said, well, we got information, we got news what these bad Saudi people did. And so, Ilana, what's really ironic is, here they, you know, you say, well, this is what Turkey is and what they do, and yet they're calling Saudi out for being bad neighbors, and they said they have video and audio. And the complaint here is that they not only terrorized and murdered this man, but they cut him up in pieces and removed him in boxes. This is a horrible story, Ilana.
It is a horrible story, not something that we should accept on its face in any way, because this is a man who worked for an American company and therefore has some hope of having some protection from the American government when he goes abroad. However, it also has to be said that he went into the consulate. He was a serious critic of Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman of Saudi Arabia. And he knew that he risked something going in there, but he was going in to get a divorce from his wife so he could marry his fiance. And there's another side of him, of Khashoggi, that we're not talking about very much, but he was closely aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood and was a proponent of Sharia over democracy. And he did not like secularism. And nobody wants to say anything bad about Khashoggi because, after all, he met a very nasty fate.
And then, of course, we have this $110 billion arms deal. The president comes out and says, well, wait a minute, I'm not canceling that. They can buy these from Russia. They can buy them from China. They can buy them from a lot of different countries. And they're going to do that. They're going to say, thank you very much. No, thank you. He said, now, he puts that information out there in the public purview again, and people go ballistic. So what do you mean you're not canceling that? You know, it's a human rights problem. You can't do it. You know, it gets really weird, as you know. Talk to me about that piece of it with the us doing business with Saudi Arabia. And what do you think where this story is with Khashoggi, what really happened here?
Well, I agree with Ilana that basically this journalist was openly aligned with the Muslim Brotherhood. And so this is more about the Saudi government cracking down on Islamist opposition, particularly in the media, rather than the typical Saudi crackdown on free press. It's not an escalation of the attack on journalists just for being journalists. For them, this is part of really a bloody war between them and the Muslim Brotherhood. And so from their perspective, and I'm not saying that they're right, mm-hmm. but from their perspective, targeting and killing a journalist that's pro-Muslim Brotherhood is the same thing as targeting a journalist from something like Al Jazeera, which everyone acknowledges is a terror-linked media outlet. Obviously, the U.S. has to stand against this type of thing because he worked for an American company. But is it the same thing as it happening to a women's rights activist or someone for secular democratic governance? There is a difference there. It doesn't mean that you approve of one and oppose the other, but there is a qualitative difference there. As for the arms deal, the U.S. and Saudi relationship is probably better than it's ever been. And that's just because of the threat from the Iranian regime and that we need each other. But the Saudi Arabia and the other similar countries in the Arab world have openly said, particularly during the Obama administration, if you don't sell us arms, particularly when we're trying to fight your Iranian adversaries, we will go to Russia. We will go to China. They said it publicly. And so I would say I don't love it, but if you have to choose between those two scenarios, you do want to be closer to the Saudis in this, especially because the Saudis are fighting Iranian proxies right now, and that's what those weapons would go towards.
So what you're saying, Ryan, basically it's easy for senators then to come out on the other side of the aisle and say, well, just cut the Saudis off. We don't like this. You can't do business with people. Yeah, we can't give them arms. We can't work with them. We can't do this when they kill his journalist, who, as you say, was questionable to begin with. And yet that's their easy fix. Yet the ramifications of that are so serious, because if that was played out the way some of them are suggesting, we would look back 5 years from now, or probably 3 years from now, and we would say, what the hell did we do? Right or wrong, Ryan?
No, that's absolutely right, especially when the Saudi government is pushing forward mm-hmm. on this Vision 2030 plan, where they want to modernize a great deal, especially in the northwestern part of the country. And that could be the turning point for getting outside influence into Saudi Arabia. So there's a long-term outlook here that you have to keep in perspective, that there are positive wheels turning, even if there is a lot of negative stuff going on in the meantime. And of course, yeah. the tyrannical government is yeah. going to act tyrannical as this happens.
That's it. And, you know, one last word I want to remind people of. Here's the thing, people. You know, we don't have to condone the way these countries operate. We also can't force them to go with, this is the one thing I say to you all the time. In America, we think that everybody needs to live by our standards. It doesn't work that way, people. It's never going to work that way. This world is made up of all kinds of people, all kinds of backgrounds and ethnicities, and it just simply is never going to work that way. But again, our politicians seem to have this, you know, this better than thou mighty attitude. Of course, not when they're in there playing with their hush fund and sexually abusing people. That's another story for another day, right? And so, having said all of that, you know, I said to somebody the other day, there was somebody who did some bad things in the West. They killed a lot of people. And they said, well, why did we give them an attorney? I said, why? This guy was so bad. This terrorist was so, I can't believe what he did. Why would we give him an attorney? And I explained to this person, I said, well, let me explain to you. This is what's called the West. This is the way the West operates. We give you an attorney even when you do really bad things. What they do in other countries, they just shoot you in the head or cut you up and put you in boxes. That's the difference between a civilized society and the rest of them. Now, how do you like that, people? But that's a fact. Let me change the beat here, and I want to talk a moment here about the United Nations ambassador. So Dina Powell, Goldman Sachs fame and all of that, and has been involved in the administration, what have you. She says, no, she doesn't want to be UN ambassador. probably not a good thing for the administration, but she says she wants to sit home with her kids, raise the family, so on and so forth. You know, again, it's a normal excuse when somebody doesn't want to get involved. Okay, we get it. We not that she was going to be it anyways, but everybody started talking about her. There are some other names now that are involved. Ilana, let me give you a couple of these names real quick and just tell listeners. We have Nancy Brinker. Now, she's the founder of the Susan G. Komen Breast Cancer Foundation. She's one name that's being put up. Now, very interesting name. Then there's New Hampshire former Senator Kelly Ayotte. Her name is being, that'd be a very interesting option as well. Another lady, Kelly Kraft. She's the U.S. ambassador to Canada. And then also there's even been talk of Kay Bailey Hutchinson. She's the current U.S. ambassador to NATO. The one thing you see with all of these choices, Ilana, is they're all high-powered women. Safe to say, that looks like where they definitely want to replace her with Nikki Haley with a high-powered woman. I mean, is that the safe bet here?
Well, I think it is. I think it's a strategy that is being used to avoid the circus that occurred when Kavanaugh was being interviewed for as a justice on the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. They don't want to bring a man in who can run into the same kind of interference. That a woman is not going to have that particular issue. So I think that it's smart to bring a woman in. But I think Nikki Haley is going to be a tough act to follow.
Yeah.
And my concern is largely with whoever is chosen, with her perceptions and opinions on the Middle East. If we don't support Israel and Israel is left on its own again, we are likely, even more likely than we are now, to dissolve into another war in the Middle East. And our support of Israel is part of a very large part of what is keeping that area of the world stable.
Kanye West goes to Washington. This is kind of funny now. What did you think of that exchange he had in the Oval Office? For real, what was your take on it as a political analyst and somebody who watches all this stuff? What was the takeaway for you when you seen Kanye West with some of the back and forth with him and the president where he opened up the Oval Office, brought all the reporters in and just went at it?
I thought Kanye was more restrained than I expected. I figured based on having watched a lot of those YouTube videos where he really just goes off the wall.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of people are pretending like he doesn't do that right now because they're supporters of the president. But look at the reality. Look on YouTube. The guy goes nuts. And I figured having a platform like that in the White House that it was going to be just a lot crazier than it actually was. But it still was crazy. His remarks by saying how in an alternative universe is this prisoner that's being held on a long prison sentence that they were talking about.
This didn't hurt the president. You think it was fairly effective, okay?
Yeah, I think so, especially because he is putting a lot of effort towards reaching the African-American community. Mm-hmm. And even if they all think Kanye's crazy, they're still going to talk about the crazy things that he said, and there's a hint of truth to some of it.
Right. Well, every president has rubbed elbows with the celebrity group, whoever they are. Every president has done this. Every president in my lifetime has done this, and clearly probably in history has done this. It just is very common because it's really called about popularity, and you impact society, and then people think, oh, you're kind of cool because you're... Now, people argue this all the time, like, does it really sway elections and things? And that's an argument for another day, people. But here's the thing. What I find, Ryan, Ilana, very interesting, the media went berserk. I mean, totally berserk about Kanye. If you watched or listened to anything they said, they were off the rails with Kanye. They had him as a mentally challenged individual times 100. They had him like a real screwball. And he's taking a big chance here, but he says he's not going to do the group think thing, and he's going to beat to his own drum, which, of course, we all applaud that. And for any person, by the way, that's a problem. Of this country is too many people beat to the drum. And so we applaud him for that. He is a little off the wall, as you say, Ryan. Obama had that YouTube lady with cereal all over her in the tub, and the left was applauding that, saying, bravo, bravo, what a great job, Mr. President. Now with Kanye West, he's mentally challenged and retarded, and what the hell is going on?
Hypocrisy is stunning. She made herself famous for about a day and a half by making a video of herself in the bathtub with Fruit Loops and milk eating, kneeling face down, eating the Fruit Loops. I mean, there isn't anything crazier than that.
I really appreciate Ryan Morrow, Ilana Friedman here. All right, we're going to do something very different now. That a couple things real fast to tell you here. Obviously, midterm elections are coming up quick. So we're going to have a segment next on the liberal perspective. That's you're going to hear the liberal viewpoint right now, what they think. You know, there's a lot of resist movement out there. What's happened? It's really gotten to a feverish pitch right now about kicking people and hurting them, and it's wild what's going on. So we're gonna get that perspective first. Then we're going to get a conservative perspective in the next conversation after that. But you'll be able to decide. I think you'll get a real interest and sense of where the country is at right now, because we've got two people to the left, I mean really left, and two people to the right, and I mean really right. You get the picture, people, right? So now you'll get a sense of what they're saying. So the same kinds of questions and analysis we'll do. Very, very interesting. And by the way, real quickly, I got to tell you this, friends, our one-year anniversary on Viewpoint is coming up at the end of this month on the 28th, Sunday. We got a special program planned. You have to tune in and listen to us then. But it's a one-year anniversary of Viewpoint this Sunday on the 28th. I can't believe it's been a year already. Absolutely amazing ride that it has been. And we also, by the way, have Viewpoint, the Midweek Report, out now as well, which is on Wednesday. You can catch that at 6 p.m. Again, friends, stay right there as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
All right, so this is something we haven't done before, I was saying to you, but I really like this style because, again, my whole goal here, people, is to bring all voices to the table of life. I say this to everybody all the time, so listen, let's put our action where our money where our mouth is, right? It's one thing to say things, it's another thing to do them, and we're going to do it right now. So the midterm elections are just weeks away now. This is a very pivotal time in the nation. There's a feverish pitch right now in the political world where people are pretty juiced, sometimes not in a good way, but you can feel it out there. I think the stakes are very high and people are feeling that. We're going to get right into it now. And again, what we do right now, we'll repeat again in the next segment with a conservative viewpoint. So I want to get both what we call in this nation, the left and the right. And then, of course, sometimes we come into the middle here, which is a very sweet thing when that happens, right? All right, let's bring our panel on right now, and I want you to welcome on, please, here. Barbara McGee is here. She is out of the L.A. area. She's a celebrity personal attaché and a life coach counseling in addiction breakthroughs. She is the host of L.A. Miracle Cure on America Out Loud Talk Radio, and she is an amazing lady and a talent. Two of these ladies, I would call them both very dear friends. They're both great political minds and understand what's going on in society. And also welcome with that word, Gail Murphy is here. She's known, people know her. She's called many times the celebritizer because she's, again, out in L.A. fame. She's a media expert, a showbiz reporter and Hollywood correspondent and speaker. Her book, by the way, is on our bookstore at America Out Loud, Gail Murphy. Just look her up there, please, and you'll get all kinds of good stuff on Gail, as well as Barbara with L.A. Miracle Cure. So that's where we're at. So let me ask you this here. I want to start with this here. And Barbara, I want to start with you on this, please. So former Attorney General Eric Holder comes out and he says, and these are all data points I want to give you right now. He says Michelle Obama was wrong when she said, when they go low, we go high. He said, when they go low, we kick them. Well, that caught a lot of people really got ticked at that, because the Attorney General, which is kind of your top law enforcement dude in the nation, that was his role. And he came out and actually said, when they go low, we kick them, which many people said that was being violent. I don't know. Everyone's got a different perspective. The comment drew applause from the audience, and the crowd started saying fight, fight, fight with chance of fight. So hold that in a moment here. Maxine Waters comes out. She says Trump enablers should expect harassment at restaurants, gas stations, shopping places, and even their homes. Well, the Secret Service agents came out and said these comments are dangerous. Hillary Clinton comes out this past week and says civility can start again when Democrats take the House and or the Senate. Until then, not so much. Now, it's gotten very, very interesting out there. Barbara, constituents listen to these people as gospel sometimes, what they say. Should the public be listening to these politicians and heads of state say these kinds of things, or what? And what's the point of this?
It's very difficult right now, the climate in America. The first thing is, we're all Americans. We're all Americans. And the pitting against each other, I think, is doing the country and our children a great disservice. I think really what is happening when you hear this, it's because the leader is having these roving rallies, and he's rallying people and belittling people and talking about people and bullying people, our leader. Right. And this sets a climate for people to want to, you hear a couple news clips like that, mm-hmm. and then the next thing you're thinking is what do we do to fight back? So it breeds a he say, she say kind of environment.
Right.
Both Hillary Clinton and Eric Holder are not holding a political office, mm-hmm. so their opinion is that of civilians. Maxine Waters, on the other hand, she's been a champion for Compton in Los Angeles for many, many years. And she's been highly disrespected as a female with the amount of ability that she's had to represent her dichotomy, her area. Mm-hmm. And I feel that most of the people that we elect and send to Washington forget who they represent. The thing that's interesting about Maxine Waters is she's never forgotten. I just shook her hand like 3 weeks ago.
So do you think Maxine is doing a good job, Barbara? Do you feel like she is?
I think she's doing an excellent job under the type of scrutiny and leadership that has become America.
Okay. Gail, what Barbara's saying, my summation there, is that my guess, she's saying that President Trump kind of started this thing with some of the talky stuff, so they're responding to that. Is that accurate, or do you have a different view on this?
Well, politics is a mud fight. We all know that. But I have to call you out on your setup for this topic, Malcolm. As much as I love you, it was really quite inflammatory. The fact is that you were just bringing up quotes that were said by Dems, and you didn't mention anything that's said by Republicans, especially the guy at the top. This is a guy who's saying the Dems are the party of crime. What? We're too busy doing yoga. Forget that. And eating granola. This is the one that's asking police departments that when you put criminals in your car, maybe you should punch them in the head first or let their head hit the side of the car. This is the same guy who's saying it's okay to beat somebody up or take a pot shot at somebody at the rally who looks different from them. So fighting is what we do in elections. That's what it's all about. Whenever you have a winner and whenever you have a loser, it's because it's a fight.
Yeah.
It's not guns. It's not knives. It's going to the ballots as Americans and doing what we are supposed to do and empowered to do if we want this grand experiment called democracy actually allow it for us to see its face.
All right. So, right. No, I appreciate that feedback right now and your setup there, Gail. But no, there was nothing skewed. These were recent comments over the past few weeks that we wanted to bring in. The comments you're speaking about the president were obviously things that were said over a long period of time. And my point is, or my next question would have been, in your opinion, who started candidate and who's turning up the heat. And clearly you've both answered that already, which is great, which is great. That's what I want to hear. When you look at the Democratic Party as a whole, back to the days of John F. Kennedy forward, where Democrats were and where the Republicans were, I mean, the parties have changed a lot over the last 30, 40 years, a great deal. But when you look at some of the new players on the scene here, Barbara, and like Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, there seems to be an environment of where they're now calling it Socialist Democrat Party. There's a lot of talk about that because of the far move to the left. What does that look like to you in a nutshell, and what does the message say to you about the Democrat Party? So are these the faces of the party, Bernie Sanders, Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez, Elizabeth Warren, etc.? Is that where the party's going?
Well, you know, I think that you become a product of your environment, and I think that every state has different issues, and I think these senators address, I really respect Elizabeth Warren and how she addresses the issues for her state. Cortez, same thing. Bernie Sanders has a better vision because he has had a vision for quite some time for the nation itself. Now, remember that people are more important in America than business. So right now, we've gone from being the country that is for people, its people, and for the fairness and democracy across the world to who's got the best business plan. That's dangerous. And that's where we're at now. So we can't look at people in the party. I don't feel that the Democrats or the Republicans represent me. I'm a Native American. I'm a Black woman. I'm a single parent. I live in California. Yeah. I mean, oh my goodness.
And I'm glad you just said everything you said, which will tell listeners that, yeah, you kind of are the ugly duckling of politics, right, Barbara?
I look pretty good right now.
I love it. You always look good, young lady. So, Gail, now pick up on that. The Democrat Party itself, the move to the far left and the socialist program they're kind of putting out there, do you think that has merit and is that the face of the party moving forward?
Well, let's look at each of these three people. What do they all have in common? They all have ideas. They all have a point of view. They all have something to say that they can lay out on the table and explain to you what it is. But the one of the things that you have to know, and you can't be that naive, nobody running for an office, no one in politics is ever going to get everything that they want. What is required for this to work is that people who come to the table with ideas. It's all about negotiating. It's talking. It's mixing it up. It's making a deal, huh? Did right. I just say that? Let's right. make a deal.
Right.
What you did was genius. You chose three people who are full of fresh, innovative, hopefully workable ideas. That's why these people are so vital. They're not vanilla. They're not oatmeal. They're not bleh. They're not plain yogurt with no fruit in it.
Interesting. All right. Let me get to some specific things. What I want to do next, ladies, I want to talk real quickly about health care. I want to talk about a woman's right to choose, and I want to talk about immigration and those three things. So we'll go quickly with each. Let's start with health care. Should government run health care, like back to the Obamacare ways and where that might go, or even have provide it? Should the government provide health care to everybody even? Is that the way? Gail, let's stay with you on that and answer that. Should we replace the insurance companies, and should the government do this, run it?
Well, once again, I have to call you out. I paid for health care, Medicare, since I was 17 and I had my first job. So it doesn't really sound to me like, ooh, the government is running it. Oh, how bad.
Yeah, but let's talk about general health care, Gail. No, let's stop there. I'm not talking about Medicare. I get that. We all understand what those programs are. That's not the question, though. We got that part. I'm asking you general health care, please, that all families and Americans should need health care to some degree. The question is, should the government run that? I mean, it's a real question. Should the government run the entire health care program? You don't need to get in my face. What?
If it works, sure, because the government, we know if they're going to run health care, they're going to cover pre-existing conditions. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And did you know that pregnancy is considered a pre-existing condition?
Okay.
If a woman's had a baby, that's pre-existing condition.
All right. So you're open to them doing that, to run it all, correct? Yeah.
Oh, well, they're doing a pretty good job with Social Security.
Okay.
Let me tell you, I got in a car accident when I was visiting in Canada. $2 copay, they fixed both ribs, they fixed my dental issue, and I was given 3 weeks' worth of care in a rehabilitation center for a $2 copay. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, they're no better than us. We're on the same continent.
So you agree healthcare could be run by the government as a whole, and they could do a pretty good job, Barbara?
Absolutely. All right. If we get a new government.
If we get a new government, gotcha. All right, let's talk next about immigration quickly, please. About 80% of the population say we need to control our border. This was a Harvard poll. What about immigration? Should we control the border, and should we build the wall, Barbara?
Well, the wall, I don't know, because the tunnels are probably what we want to close up. That's the problem. It's not people coming over the wall. Now, however, right now I'm in San Diego, California, and it is a problem. I'm telling you, the problem is that people have been told the wrong information in their home country. And when you're told the wrong information in your own language, then you flee to America thinking that we're the good country that you used to know us to be, where you can come here and get started, and we love you and your family. The reality of it is America doesn't love you. Don't come here. Don't bring your little kids, because this is not the climate in this country. You put yourself at risk. And that is what governments need to tell their people.
So should we tighten I get your point there, Barbara. Should we tighten the borders up, do you think?
Well, absolutely. I'm right here. I'd like to run over to Mexico, but guess what? I didn't bring my passport. Do you think I can run over there? I don't think so.
And so if you do, you may not get back.
Run over here. Exactly.
So, anyways, all right. Let me.
Everybody's got a border. Everybody needs it. And then when you come here, you've got to want to be here, not to create your own country within a country.
All right.
But you've got to come here and learn the language.
Gail, should we tighten up the borders?
Well, from the last statistics I heard, that there's a decrease in people coming across the borders. We are creating entrapment situations for these people that are running for their lives. They are eligible for amnesty, but they're giving them, as Barbara says, the wrong information. So what happens is they do what's actually illegal, being told that it is legal, and they are ensnared. They're separated from their children. The parents are put in cages. In many cases, the parents are sent back to their home country.
Okay.
Skip me or tired, you're poor.
Do we tighten up and protect our borders, or don't we? It has to be a yes or no. Either we do it or we don't. When you say the hungry and the tired and the poor and the masses, and, you know, I get it. I get the whole statue thing. I we all understand that. But my question is simple. Should we do something to crack down on border? Do we need more border security or not? That's the question.
We have immigration laws on the book. We need to follow the law.
Lastly, I want to talk to you both about popular vote versus electoral college, okay? Gail, you speak first. So let's have Barbara talk on that. Are you in favor more of the popular vote or the electoral college?
I think the electoral college is proving itself to be the real superstar here. You look at Bush versus Gore. Gore won the popular vote. Bush became president. Certainly with Trump and Hillary, she had 3 million more votes than Trump did, but he had the electoral college, so he won it. I think it's the popular vote by far. When this stuff was written, we were not a full country.
Okay, so you're in favor of the popular vote being the way, not the electoral college, right?
It's the only thing that makes sense.
Even though Clinton would not have been president then, because he didn't...
Let the cards fall where they may.
He didn't win the
popular
vote, yeah. We would have never had a President Bill Clinton. Okay, Barbara, answer to that, please. The popular vote versus electoral college.
Well, I think we need to abolish the electoral college, because we've seen now what has happened to our country by using that as the rule of law. Now we have a celebrity that is running our country and making decisions every single day that affect us. I mean, it is one of the saddest things I've ever seen, that we have to endure this as people. And, you know, it goes
endure what, Barbara? Endure what?
Well, I was going to say endure the fact that our country
is no longer seen as, number one, the most educated, number two, the most desirable place to be, number three, the most tolerant and the most upright. We're not seen as that anymore in the world. People see us now as our leader. And I don't care to be seen that way. I don't agree with it.
Okay.
And I think Americans need to wake up. We need to understand that our country is failing us. The priorities for our leaders and people that we have elected that are in office are not doing us a service.
So, Barbara, that's fine. So, you know, and you would consider yourself a never-Trumper, correct?
He is not my president.
Okay, gotcha. And Gail, would you speak to, are you a never-Trumper?
He is not my president.
Okay, there you go. I mean, that's a great way to end that. So you both don't acknowledge him even as a president, and many people don't for that matter here. All right, very interesting. I like what we just did. Tremendous thank you. I enjoyed both of you so much. Gail Murphy, Barbara McGee here. And that was a great perspective you just got from real Americans. These are great, strong women that you just heard leaders. And I like what you just hear because it at least explains to you what people are really thinking. And that's what's most important. If we get everybody to the table, we can have this conversation. Up next, we're going to do the same thing with two from the other side of the aisle, and we'll see where that goes. I'm interested to see how we play this out here, friends. Stay right there as Viewpoint rolls on here.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends, with 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. I think it's very interesting when we look at our nation, and I like to look and see what connects us as a people. But to do that, and before we do that, we really need to talk about what divides us as a people. And quite frankly, if we're not all going to bring everybody to the table of life and figure it out, then I think we probably have problems. And that's kind of where we stand right now in our nation, I believe. A lot of people, you know, you get on with a lot of these pundits and a lot of these media guys, and, you know, their goal is to make people look like an ass. And that's what they do really well. That's not my job here. My goal is not to do that to people. I don't invite them on the show and then make them look like fools. I don't see what that accomplishes, but there are plenty of people out there on CNN, Fox News, MS, and the rest of the networks that you can go enjoy who do that very, very well. Not here. So let's bring the ball forward. Let's remind you again, our one-year anniversary for Viewpoint. If you can believe, we've been doing this for a year, people. I still can't believe it. But coming up at the end of this month, on the 28th of October, that Sunday, one-year anniversary, we'll be putting a candle on the cake, and we invite you. We're going to do a special show that day. We've got some things we're working on there for that. And please tell your friends and family and share the show out there. Let them know the kind of work we're doing here. And remember, we have our Wednesday midweek report now for Viewpoint coming at you as well. That show you catch at 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on America Out Loud Talk Radio Network. And again, all the news and information, friends, are back at AmericaOutloud.com. Let's get to our panel here and let me welcome on two very good conservative voices. Ava Armstrong is here. She's a political commentator, radio personality, producer here at America Out Loud. Friends, Ava is an author, and Ava's got like 15 plus books to her credit. She's on Amazon. You get her in our bookstore at America Out Loud as well. Take a look at her books and see. She's doing some great work out there about law enforcement, military, and patriotism. Brooke Says joins us. She's another very strong conservative voice. She's a patriot, a strategic communications analyst, and cultural impact specialist. Very interesting to get her perspective. She's a weekly columnist here at America Out Loud and has some great articles you really should read and check out. Okay, President Trump comes out and says the Democrats have gotten too dangerous to govern. But, you know, quite frankly, many on the left would say that President Trump is the start of all this. He's the one that has put a lot of vitriol out there, a lot of hatred, a lot of his talk, a lot of his insults, and have been over the top, through the roof, and that he doesn't know enough to shut up. And that's been the big conversation out there. Brooke, let me get your opinion first. That really is the talking point, that Trump is the one who started all this. What do you say to that?
Well, it's easy to say that, right? Because Obama was nice, soft, sweet, well-spoken. It's absolutely not true, and I had a conversation with someone about this yesterday. Nobody talks about Occupy Wall Street. That was during Obama's term, and that was a fomented and organized group. They did violent things. Black Lives Matter was before Trump. Antifa was before Trump. If you look at the James O'Keefe videos, Bob Creamer, who is a Clinton ally, paid for the organization during the Trump rallies. It's not new. I completely disagree with that. Obviously, Trump says some very inflammatory things, you know, and think what you will about that. I happen to think that he's the first Republican that fights back, and if it's crude and raw and rude, I don't really care, because the nice guys have not won, and they haven't really accomplished too much. And these people have been rolling over conservatives forever.
And Brooke, you were in the Never Trump camp and really didn't like some of that rhetoric he was saying initially.
Well, I was, to be clear, I don't mind a lot of, I don't really care about a lot of the things that he says. Personally, I don't, because I think that the hypocrisy literally explodes my head. The left has been saying things since George Bush was elected. They made movies about assassinating him, books about it. It's ridiculous. The fake outrage on the left is ridiculous. I was a Never Trumper for about a month, simply because I'm a conservative and I was not sure that Trump was actually a conservative.
Right.
That's the only reason. So I want to clarify.
All right.
I always liked Trump. You know, I just wasn't sure he was actually a conservative, but he's governing very conservatively.
All right, fair said,
like
fairly
that.
Said. Well said, well said. All right, Ava, let's speak to that point, please. You and I have certainly talked a lot about that on the network, and but again, you hear the things I put out there. So what about that? Is Trump potentially the cause of some of these people from the left going off the rails?
Oh, no. I think he's rising to the challenge, and I, full disclosure here, I was a Never Trumper for a brief period of time as well.
Yeah.
I was on the Cruz crew. I was very, very strong for Ted Cruz. But I'll be very honest with you right now. Of all those people standing on that stage, all 16 other guys and women could never have done what Trump has done. So I am so much stronger a Trump supporter as time goes on. Even, you know, just the first 2 years of his presidency, it's been a whirlwind of activity.
Yeah.
No other person standing on that stage ever could have taken the punishment this man has taken. So I'll tell you what, politics is a blood sport, okay? And this all started back, the real bad stuff started back when Al Gore and the Hanging Chad and all of that stuff, okay? And then it got really ramped up when Obama was president. One of the first things he did was have the beer summit so that he could humiliate a white cop on television, and the optic was just really sad. And all through the 8 years of Obama, he divided America in every way that he could. There was great turmoil. I joined the Tea Party. I was very involved in that when he was president. But I never said he was not my president, okay? I was unhappy with him. I was angry with him. I was frustrated. But I protested in a civil way. I never broke laws. What's going on now is something very, very evil.
Interesting. It's interesting what you just said. I'm so glad you said what you said when you say you never said the not my president, because as you all listened in the last segment, there were some comments about that where they felt that Trump was not their president, and that was pretty well said, people. So, all right, listen, I want to talk to you next about the Democratic Party and the Republican Party. There seems to be a further distance between these two parties now. They're not; it's not the same Democrat Party it used to be, and it's certainly not the same Republican Party. Many people would say both of these parties have been hijacked from different people. They say Trump has hijacked the Republican Party, and he's now the face of that, which nobody ever thought would be possible. But on the left, you have people like Alexandra Ocasio-Cortez. You have Bernie Sanders, you have Elizabeth Warren, and you have these, and you could go further, but let's start with that, and there's plenty of others that are running for political office that are socialist policies. They are, many would call far left leaning, I mean way over to the left, and they go into borderline socialist programs. What are your thoughts on that? The shape up of these parties, in other words, is the Democrat Party going, is that becoming far more socialist? And is, I mean, Is that what you're seeing? What about the Republicans? Have they done a good job?
Well, the problem is the Democrat Party has moved to the far left, and the Republicans have moved more to the center. So what we have now is the Republicans are looking actually quite moderate in comparison to the left. And I'm all for free speech. I mean, if you're a communist or a socialist and you want to get up on your soapbox and give your speech and, you know, be on television and tell us what you think America should look like, I want to hear the details. I want to hear it all because I think it's very important for voters to hear this message from the left.
Okay.
And I no longer call this the Democrat Party. I call it the leftist party.
Yeah.
Because they're way over there.
What is your take on that, Brooke?
The reality is that Obama is a Marxist. He always was a Marxist. He just knew that he couldn't say it. And that's one of the things that I talked about in my article. He could not come out at the time and say, I am a Marxist. I am for, like, for instance, he was for gay marriage. He couldn't say it at first because the black community was not at all for that. They actually, they helped Prop 8 to pass in California. The black vote sealed opposition to gay marriage in California. So that's the reality. He knew his his major constituency. He knew he couldn't say those things because America wasn't ready. So he primed the well and created, you know, created a situation where they could actually come out and say all those things. And the Republican Party, I like to say it was hijacked by Trump because they were saying all these things and campaigning as conservatives and then not doing the things that they campaigned on. And they just passed a terrible budget, which I'm not happy about. They are still big spending Republicans. So, you know, the way I look at it is we have time to work some of that stuff out.
Mm-hmm.
But the far left is anathema. They hate America. They have said there are many things that they've said, different candidates, that they, you know, the candidate for Senate in Arizona hates their own constituency.
But many people would say that it's not that they hate America, they just see a different America, Brooke, that they see it as a different America than what you see it as. And that really is. And coming to that point, Brooke, I want to stay with you a moment. And there are some specific issues I want to talk to you about. The first one being healthcare. Should the government run all of healthcare? In other words, should they run, maybe even replace the insurance companies and not just the Obamacare piece, but maybe they should have mandated healthcare for all Americans. Should they be in play for that?
No. The government doesn't do a good job at stuff like that. You want the DMV running your healthcare? I don't think so. We need private-public partnerships. Why can I buy my car insurance across state line, but I can't buy my healthcare across state lines? There's a lot of, you know, capitalism gets a bad name because cronies take over capitalism. You can have free market solutions to everything, which is why people can buy an iPhone, you know, and a big screen TV now costs $300. There are intelligent solutions that are not involved with the government taking over everything. And the irony that really astounds me, the people on the left hate politicians, but they want politicians running every facet of their life. It doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah.
I think there are intelligent, inventive solutions that can be found to all of these problems.
Ava, what do you think about healthcare as far as having government run the entire healthcare system? Could it work?
Oh, no. I lean libertarian, as you probably know, and I think that I should be looking at the Constitution. Where in the Constitution does it say, or in our Bill of Rights, that we should have government-funded health care or government doing anything with health care? There's nothing in that. So this is a private industry, and how it will all shake out, I don't know. But I know one thing for sure. If you want to really screw something up, have government handle it. The only thing they do well is they run the military, and that's the only job the government should really have.
Yeah.
They should be out of everything else.
Ava, let me stay with you and talk about immigration next. About 80% of the population say we need to control our borders. At least that's what a Harvard poll says. I guess the question I have for you is, how important is immigration control in the border, and should we build the wall?
Oh, well, here we go. This is what government should be focusing on, okay? This is what government should be focusing on. I mean, 100% yes. We should build a wall. We should reform immigration. I mean, all these things Trump has been wanting so badly to do, and it's so important that we give him a conservative Congress to work with him on these plans to protect our country. This is what our government should be doing.
Mm-hmm. Brooke, what about those in the Democrat Party who don't want the wall? They don't want to, they're part of America. Their voices here. They don't want the wall, and they don't really want to protect the borders. They want people. They, in fact, it was pointed out in the last segment that we're supposed to, our international mantra is to give us your tithe, your masses, your whatever, whatever, whatever. You know, the whole statue deal there. That was pointed out to me in the last segment. What do you say to that?
Well, Ava is completely right. And it's absolutely true. They also need to work on visa overstays. That statement that you said, that you made about the, it wasn't the Statue of Liberty, it was a placard on the Statue of Liberty, mm-hmm. right? It was at the base of the Statue of Liberty. It was a way to get fundraising for the statue. Look, we have people in America who have a lot of problems. American citizens, children of American citizens. Right? We have people in prison who have children at home. Okay? We need to fix our own problem. Charity begins at home. Mm-hmm. We don't need to take in every problem of the world, because if we keep the borders open, then 3 billion people are going to want to come here. Mm-hmm. This is the reality of the left.
Yeah.
And the right.
Yeah.
The Republicans want cheap labor. Mm-hmm. The Democrats want votes. It's really that simple. They don't actually care about the kids in the cages, quote unquote. Those were Obama's pictures. They all knew it. They just used it as a cudgel against Trump.
I like what the line you just said, because you called out both parties with that line. That's very good. Well said, Brooke, that one with the cheap labor and the other. I applaud you for calling out the whole system. That's really cool. And you do that sometimes a lot, actually. I really appreciate that, which is really what we really should be trying to get all Americans to do. Last question to you both, please. Brooke, popular vote versus electoral college. There's a lot of call for, again, abolishing the electoral college and going to the popular vote. Is it time to do that in America?
No. And of course they're doing it because Hillary lost the electoral college. If she had won the electoral college and lost the popular vote, they would be calling to abolish the popular vote. Everyone knows that who has a brainstem. You have four states only that people are going to be campaigning in, and nobody else will have representation. The founders of the country, if they want to go live in another country where the popular vote matters, that's fine. The electoral college matters in this country because we have a representative republic constitutional form of government.
All right, Ava, let's speak to that. Your last thoughts, please, on the popular vote versus electoral college, please.
My greatest fear. It's my greatest fear that this will mm-hmm. become, you know, America does not understand what we have. We have a representative republic. We have to keep a representative republic. And I will fight to the finish for that.
Interesting. All right, friends. Tremendous thank you to Brooke Says, Ava Armstrong. What an interesting couple of segments. I think you should all have hopefully a little more wisdom, but certainly some insight as to where our voices, and, you know, we say let the silent voices be heard. Nobody was silent today, mind you. Everybody was pretty out loud, as we say, which is what we want here, clearly. But, yeah, and it was all of that. But let me say to you this. You know, it's interesting, the vision of America, again, back to that shining city on a hill and what and who it is. I do find the whole conversation fascinating as a patriot, as an American myself. But again, you've got to look at people's motives sometime. What do they really think their America looks like? Because everybody has a different view of America. A perfect example, friends, is the Statue of Liberty. Many people perceive the Statue of Liberty as a troublemaker. Other lookers are a moment of independence and uniqueness with that torch lit high in the harbor there. There's a lot to this thing we call freedom here. There's a lot to what America is. But again, it is a republic. It is also an open format where you can say what you want to say and not be cut up and put into boxes, which is what happened to the Saudi consulate, potentially, that we talked about early in the program, right? So, listen, I think we all need to step back a minute from the crack pipe, quite frankly, and think a minute about this whole thing. What are we doing? What's this experiment called America? Where do we go with this thing ahead? And again, we got to bring all the voices to the table. It's an absolute pleasure to have you join us today. Again, come back every Sunday for Viewpoint This Sunday. Join us Wednesday for the Midweek Report again. You can catch that all back at AmericaOutloud.com, friends. And again, email us, talk@AmericaOutloud.com. And remember our one-year anniversary coming pretty quick, friends. Hard to imagine. The main thing with Viewpoint Friends is this: we will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle, so you can decide what you want to do with your vote and where you're going, right? We don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.